time now for hour number two of this weekend's big two-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And, of course, the host of the program, its founder and guiding light, is Carol Marx. Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. We'll be hearing from Carol this hour. We'll also be hearing from our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who will be talking about health. He'll be talking to an expert in cardiovascular disease, interventional cardiology, and nuclear cardiology from Harvard Medical School and Johns Hopkins Hospital. That's coming up later in the program. Right now, let's kick the hour off with Carol Marx in conversation with an expert on archaeology. Her name is Marilyn Johnson. She's been a staff writer for Life, an editor at Esquire, and at Red Book, too. Her new book is titled Lives in Ruins, and it's published by Harper.
Did you have any interest in becoming an archaeologist, and did your idea for writing Life in Ruins come in part because of the previous book that you wrote, which was The Perverse Pleasures of Obituaries, which is kind of hard, right, to imagine, but what was your connection?
Well, I'll tell you, I think everybody wanted to be an archaeologist growing up. Everybody I talked to, 75% of them. We all dig. And at some point, some of us stop digging. And I had fantasies about being an archaeologist that were dashed by my performance in high school chemistry and biology class. I was sort of flushed out of the sciences, so I didn't pursue that. But when I came to write a book about obituaries and obituary writers, I started reading in the obituaries about what was happening in archaeology. And some of the archaeologists who had recently died seemed to lead fascinating lives. And I thought, I want to get out there.
And then your book eventually got born out of all your researching. And you did take some training classes, and you did do some field work, and you went to a field training school on the island, I think it's of Stadia in the Caribbean.
St. Eustatius is called, or the locals call it Statia. It's not a very famous island, but it was pretty much the center of the trading universe in the late 1700s. Believe it or not.
And
there
what did
were
you learn?
Sugar plantations there, and there's an awful lot of what they call historical archaeology. And so I got to dig with some people there. And, you know, the thing is, I started knowing no archaeologists and nothing really about archaeology. And there are ways that you can find out that anyone who is interested in this subject can find out. There are field schools that take volunteers. They cost a little bit of money. Some of them cost quite a bit of money. Some of them are practically free.
Wow. Now, when you were out there, you know, getting some practical training, mm-hmm. you must have learned about some of the emotional and physical qualities that an archaeologist needs to have, because it's not easy.
It is not easy. It is, you know, and I described them at some point as they're kind of like pirates, you know. They're all scarred and, you know, some of them have bad knees from working in the trenches. Some of them have had malaria multiple times. You know, they're covered with, you know, they're insect bites. I mean, you know, it's very tough work. A lot of them have sun-damaged skin. While I was learning about archaeology, I was studying the archaeologists. And the attention usually isn't focused on them. It's usually on the site or what they've dug up. So I was really interested in the humans behind it.
And would you say that really the whole driving force behind most archaeologists doing this work, which is so tough physically, you know, kneeling all day in the sun and all those kinds of things, that what drives them is not getting rich, but what fascinating thing they might find in the next shovel of dirt?
Oh, curiosity is the number one quality, I would say, that drives the archaeologists. And I experienced that, too. I mean, you think, I don't usually go outdoors. I do not usually get myself in uncomfortable physical situations. But there I was, you know, kneeling in the tropical sun, full sun, in the middle of the day, in the middle of August. And I hardly noticed the annoyances because the suspense of turning over earth that no one has turned over in hundreds of years is, I don't know, there's something really primitive about it, and it's cool.
And then you sometimes do find something that hasn't been dug up at all. I thought it was really interesting that you worked in really uncharted territory when you were in Pisgah, New York, and mm-hmm. were lucky enough to find with the archaeologists a Revolutionary War burial ground. How did they happen to come across that?
Well, this is how a lot of archaeology is discovered, and what employs a lot of archaeologists is when they go ahead of economic development and someone has decided to build a hotel or to build a strip mall or to build a house, and it happens to be on ground that for some reason somebody thinks might have archaeological significance. And in this case, the archaeologist was digging for someone who wanted to put a strip mall along Route 9 in Fishkill, New York, which is it's a little bit upstate. It's got a real commercial strip. It has a highway entrance right there. It was on what used to be the Fishkill Supply Depot, which turned out to be not a very famous but a secret supply depot for the Revolutionary War that played a significant role in our winning that war. And he turned up seven graves, and subsequent archaeology found hundreds more of graves of Revolutionary War soldiers, from soldiers who would have died as a result of wounds in nearby battles or from smallpox or other diseases that were rampant during the Revolutionary War. It's incredible, right?
Right, so how did they take care of their dead and wounded? And this is all in secrecy because they were hiding, I guess, a lot of ammunition.
Yes, and they were hiding troops. They were mustering troops there. They were 5 miles inland from the Hudson River, which the British were all over. The British were all over nearby Continental Village. They had burned Kingston, which was nearby. I mean, it was a really harrowing time. And how they managed to tend they're wounded and sick in such great secrecy. And, of course, they buried them without markers. And there it sits now. It's on private land, so there's nothing that we can do. It's up to the owner, really, what happens there. And he wants a very, you know, a handsome price for the land. He had ambitions for it. So it's an interesting problem that we have here in the United States about how to preserve our common history.
And, you know, it makes me wonder, Marilyn, about what's under all our paved-over parking lots that are all over this country.
That's right. Well, we know there aren't any British kings probably underneath
That's
them.
That's true. That is certainly true. And an archaeology curiosity that you write about, I really found interesting, the extreme beverages, taking beer seriously, because you went to a lecture given by the director of the University of Pennsylvania's Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology, and he told you about, I think it was great research.
He did as an expert. Here's the greatest research I heard about. This guy,
right.
I mean, he's been on actual digs in the country of Jordan, you know, looking at their pottery. And he's sitting in his office one day at the museum, and he says, you know, I wonder what's in the bottom of some of those pots that people dug up back in the 50s and 60s, you know, that are just sitting in our storeroom. So he goes into the storeroom, and he scrapes the stuff at the bottom of these amphora that came from the tomb of King Midas.
You believe that?
And he does a chemical analysis on it and figures out what they were eating at the funerary feast and what they were drinking. And he figures out how to get somebody to help him reverse engineer or recreate that drink. And it's this mad good beer that has tons of honey in it. It's really like good stuff.
Fascinating topic. That's Marilyn Johnson in conversation with Carol Marx. Her book is titled Lives in Ruins, and it's published by Harper. If you'd like more information about any of the subjects you hear on this program, and then some, including the adventures of Carol Marx, and resources for better living, check out the Touch of Gray website. It's atouchofgray.com, and gray is spelled with an E. It's atouchofgray.com, and as I said, gray is spelled with an E. Carol Marx returns in the next segment in conversation with Boris Johnson, the very popular and internationally known mayor of London. He's written a fascinating history of Winston Churchill, The Churchill Factor, How One Man Made History. It's published by Riverhead, and we're going to learn all about it next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best. So take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, as we move through hour number two of this weekend's two-hour spectacular. Here's Carol Marx again in conversation now, as promised, with Boris Johnson. He's a very popular and internationally famous mayor of London, England. He's going to talk about his new book titled The Churchill Factor, How One Man Made History, published by Riverhead.
And you got to be pleased that one of the biggest selling books currently at Amazon is The Churchill Factor, How One Man Made History. You got to be happy.
No, it's been in the bestseller lists in Britain for a while now, and I'm absolutely thrilled to see it selling a bit over here too now. And I think the reason is, I hope, that it's a chance to tell the story of Churchill again to a new audience that's forgotten many of the incredible things that he did, but to focus on the particular turning point in history in 1940 when things could have gone so badly the other way. And really, it was only because Churchill was there that the British cabinet took the right decision to fight on. And
you are right, and I think I learned so many interesting things about Churchill in your book, so I thought we would talk a little bit about them. And one of them that I hadn't realized was that he had a lot of contradictory thoughts about the war, because he hated war, and he scorned politicians who wanted to go fight but hadn't experienced it, and yet he was so fearless on the battlefield. He was almost suicidal when he was flying, and he was shot at, and he killed with his, you know, some men. So what's the explanation for these opposing two sides of his character?
I think that he as a kid, he wasn't particularly brave. He was quite a small little runty kid, and there was one occasion when some other kids threw cricket balls at him, and he ran away, and he desired a reputation for physical bravery, and that's why he did these crazy things like getting up in planes when they'd been barely invented, and flying himself, and watching his instructors crash and kill themselves, and then getting up in a plane again, and as you say, being shot at on four continents. And he's the only prime minister in British history to have been in so many battles in so many parts of the world. And yet, it's also true that he hated slaughter. He was a very compassionate guy. He blubbed. He wept at the drop of a hat. He would cry about anything. And his whole approach in the First World War, which he was by no means responsible for, but his whole approach was to try to avert to circumvent the slaughter on the Western Front by sending the ships round to the Dardanelles, right, to try to turn the flank of Germany and get the war over more quickly. And of course, it was a catastrophic failure, but that was his intention. And similarly with the tank, what he was really trying to do was to build a machine that would save men from being torn to pieces by the bullet.
You know, it absolutely amazed me that he was able to develop this Land Over tank, which was so unusual. And who would have thought, you know, that he had that capability? Because, as you said, he designed the tank to save men's lives, because it could actually go over ditches, and it had really big guns.
That's right. And he there's a wonderful memo he writes where you can see his brain working, and he says, let's get two steam traction engines and let's kind of bolt them together, and then let's have cleats on the wheel so that it won't skid in the mud. And, you know, he's just sort of inventing it off the top of his head, and the officials take it away, and a brilliant guy called Eustace Tennyson Daincourt sets up a committee called the Landships Committee, and they work, and of course it takes a long time, and a lot of the experiments fail, but finally they come up with this machine that can clear the ditches, that can go over the trenches, and in 1918 it's absolutely crucial, and it is indispensable in the great 100-day offensive that helps Britain win.
And I also was, you know, impressed by the fact that when he held, you know, the various cabinet posts he had, he never backed down in the face of overwhelming odds. You know, he stood up for the trade unions, health service, free speech, civil rights, social security, and immigration. And that took a lot of guts.
He had a lot of guts. That's the big thing that I took away from it all, was he just was the most phenomenally brave guy, morally, not just physically. He made himself physically brave, but he was morally brave. And when he took a position, it wasn't necessarily right, but he was going to stick to it. And he did that over Indian independence, where he was completely wrong. He did it over the abdication of the king, where, again, he totally misunderstood the mood of the public and of Parliament. But when it came to Churchill came to the Nazis, he was absolutely right, and he saw Hitler for the evil that he was, and he, thank goodness he stuck to his guns, because a lot of people were telling him not to.
And at that point in time, I mean, Europe was completely overrun. And I know that if Churchill hadn't stood up, that would have been a terrible thing. Well, let me just say that I think our country is polarized, and we certainly could use a politician like Churchill. And Mayor Johnson, you're also known as someone who crosses the line and party divide, and that's a very good thing. And I wanted to ask you, a lot of people are saying that you might want to, you know, wind down after mayor and go back to parliament, and I hope you do because England needs you.
You're so sweet. You're so sweet to say so. I got to see how it goes. I got to fulfill my mandate as mayor, but I think any comparison between Winston Churchill and modern politicians is, alas, completely unfounded. Churchill was a one-off.
It was.
I tried to get that over in the book.
And you certainly did. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely fascinating conversation. That's Boris Johnson in conversation with Carol Marx, the host and founder of our program. And he is, of course, the very popular and internationally well-known Mayor of London. His book that they discussed about Winston Churchill is The Churchill Factor, How One Man Made History, and it's published by Riverhead. More information is available, if you would like it, at our website, atouchofgray.com, atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. My name is Michael Harrison. I am the anchor of the program, and we thank Carol Marx for her contributions to the second hour. Moving forward, we're going to be joined by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. And Richard Neer will be talking with Dr. Willie Lawrence, who has a medical degree and residency at Harvard Medical School and a fellowship at Johns Hopkins Hospital, which means he's quite an educated and highly regarded doctor. And he's board certified in internal medicine, cardiovascular disease, interventional cardiology, nuclear cardiology. He's the real deal. And he's going to talk about the importance of managing your blood pressure during cold and flu season. And I've got a few questions about that that I'm going to be discussing with the interviewer, Richard Neer. We're going to talk a little bit about cold weather and how does it really affect your body from the perspective of being layman. You know, what do you think? You ever think about, you know, what does it mean to catch a cold? Or you're more likely to have a cold if the weather is cold. You know, some say no, some say yes. Usually mothers say yes and doctors say no. And maybe there's truth somewhere in between. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined for the rest of the way by our esteemed senior correspondent, a man of many, many interests and disciplines, Richard Neer. Coming up in a moment, Richard Neer is going to be speaking with Dr. Willie Lawrence. He's a very well-known and respected doctor. He has a medical degree and residency at Harvard Medical School and a fellowship at Johns Hopkins Hospital, board-certified in internal medicine, cardiovascular disease, interventional cardiology, and nuclear cardiology. And he's going to be talking to Richard about the importance of managing your blood pressure during cold and flu season. Interesting. I'll tell you, Richard, I know you're the only one, and the doctor, of course, who are privy to what's being discussed, because you already have it, as they say in radio, in the can, and we're going to debut it in a few minutes. But I never really thought about blood pressure as being connected to colds and flu. Any enlightening information you can give us the quick trailer about?
You'll have to listen to the interview.
Oh.
Because it's a pretty deep subject, but it reminds me, you know, when I was a kid, and I grew up in Syracuse, New York. Whoa. And you were on Long Island then, I guess.
Yep.
We used to love the snow. Anytime it snowed, oh, we have a snow day. We don't have to go to school. We can go out sledding or making snowmen. And then as you get to be an adult, it's not so much fun anymore, is it?
No. As a matter of fact, I didn't find the cold to be all that much fun other than playing in the snow when the snow wasn't cold. There are times when the snow is warm, and that's a whole other complex subject.
The nuclear snow. Yeah.
Nah, you know that this it could be like 30 degrees or 32 degrees, and you're on that hill, and you're on the sled, and you're making a snowman, and snow is powder. It's those. We used to walk to school, and I used to remember, oh my gosh, it was a mile and a half walk. And the gloves and the hats and the boots and
the mittens.
And I just remember how sharply piercing and painful the cold was when you were not playing in it, but you just had to go out in it. And I don't know, there's so much about cold is psychological. If you live in Florida and it's a 55 degree day, everybody's frozen and achy, and you have a 55 degree day in New England, where I spend most of my time, in the middle of January, and they call it balmy, and you truly feel warm. A lot of it is a head trip, except when it goes down to those wind chill factors below 20 and they're playing football and you know, people are suffering.
Yes, and those people who go out without their shirts on, painted with the colors of their team. It's interesting because, yeah, I have relatives in Florida, and, you know, we talk to them, and I hate it when people down south, and I do this myself, you know, when you say, oh, man, it's so cold here, and you go, well, it's 60 here, and you go, oh, yeah, okay, fine. Mm-hmm. Well, call me in the middle of the summer when it's 90 and the humidity is 90 and we're in a nice, cool 72 degrees. Then let's talk.
Mm. Well, I've lived all over the country, as have you. I've lived in California. I've lived in Florida. I've lived in the Northeast. And one of the things I find that people who live in warm climates have this fascination with the winter when they know that back east or up north, it's like snowstorms and 20 degrees and really freezing, and they see it on TV, and they're in 70-degree weather. And I find that when I, you know, we talk to people on the phone a lot, obviously, or email all over the country these days, it's like a neighborhood, I find that when people open the conversation, they have to give you a weather forecast. Oh, by the way, it's 79 degrees here outside my window. How you doing back there in Massachusetts?
Well, I think part of it is affirming your decision to move. You know, when you move from the north to the south, you constantly have to reinforce why you did it. And you know, your relatives and your friends that you've left behind up north, you kind of feel, well, I've abandoned them. And you constantly have to convince, well, you know, but hey, boy, I could be in 4-degree weather or 70-degree weather, so I made the right decision. I think a lot of that is self-affirming. What do you think?
No question about it. And so many of these decisions are decisions that we make with mixed emotions, that we're constantly talking ourselves into it. Back to the juxtaposition of what you're used to. What do you find more comforting? Coming in out of the freezing cold and snow into a warm home with a fire and having some hot cocoa? Or coming in out of the hot, sweaty, 90-degree, sweltering Miami weather into an air-conditioned room and having a lemonade. Which do you find more soul-satisfying?
Well, since you're asking me that in January, it's coming in from the cold. But if you ask me that in July, I'd tell you the opposite. I'd say coming in from the heat.
One of the things that makes me crazy about the Florida side of my life, and I have a residence in Florida, and I don't spend enough time there, but I spend some, is that you freeze when you're down there. When you go out to eat or you go to a mall or you go to a restaurant, everything is so turned up, so cold that you have to go. You have to say, okay, we're going to eat at so-and-so. Should we bring sweaters? and to get there, you're going through 95-degree sweltering, you know, 180 million percent humidity. And then you go into the restaurant and you freeze as if you were sitting, you know, in a park.
Well, that's like you were saying before. If it's 67 and in your house in the winter and you've warmed it up to 67, it feels warm. Whereas if it's 67 and you're in the air conditioning, it feels cold.
Well, why is it that anything below 70 indoors is freezing, and anything, you know, from 50 to 70 outdoors feels normal. And it's the same temperature. Haven't you noticed that? You know, if a house is below 70 degrees, it's chilly.
You're talking to the wrong guy because I keep my house at 66.
Well, that's only because you're cheap.
Your
heart is warmed by the money you're saving.
I'm trying to preserve the planet here wasting our natural
resources.
You're
preserving your bank account. We have to take a quick break, and then coming up next, Richard, we'll be talking to the esteemed Dr. Willie Lawrence, and then we'll continue this hot and cold conversation in the final segment of the program coming up. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Whoa, a digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Glad you like it. We can finally toss out that old massive stereo.
Mom, you can't just throw out electronics. They need to be recycled or donated.
Recycled? Like aluminum cans?
Yeah. You just go to greenergadgets.org, enter your zip code, and it tells you where the nearest certified recycling center is.
I knew that.
Okay, Mom.
Recycling electronics is as easy as buying them. Log on to greenergadgets.org to find electronics recycling options near you.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and as promised, here's Richard Neer in conversation with Dr. Willie Lawrence. As mentioned, he has a medical degree in residency at Harvard Medical School and a fellowship at Johns Hopkins Hospital, board certified in internal medicine, cardiovascular disease, interventional cardiology, and nuclear cardiology. He's going to talk to Richard now about the importance of managing your blood pressure during cold and flu season.
Talk about decongestants and high blood pressure. This is something I think most of us are not really aware of.
Yeah, well, first of all, let's talk a bit about high blood pressure. You know, you're a show for people who are over 50 years of age, and what we know about high blood pressure is that its prevalence increases with age. In the American population in general, there's one-third of Americans have high blood pressure. In an African-American population, that number approaches 45%. So it's a prevalent problem. It's out there. It's a common problem, and the common cold is a common problem. And when you put the two together, there are concerns about taking someone whose blood pressure may be borderline and because of his illness, their blood pressure may increase. Or take in someone who has a known diagnosis of hypertension, whose blood pressure is controlled, but with this illness, all of a sudden their blood pressure is not controlled. So it's important that people who have high blood pressure, who are concerned about high blood pressure, during times of the stress of an illness, they need to follow their blood pressure more carefully.
I'm sure a lot of people don't even know if they have high blood pressure. There are ways to find out without even going to a physician, aren't there?
Absolutely. The way you find out whether you have high blood pressure is to have your blood pressure checked. And in point of fact, we are more concerned as clinicians about our patient's blood pressure, not in our office where it can be artificially elevated, but at home. So it's really important that people avail themselves to ways of checking blood pressure in places other than the doctor's office, whether that's at a pharmacist. And for most of us, it means actually having a blood pressure a monitor in the home, because that will give you, as a patient, a more accurate indication of what your blood pressure is during your daily activities and therefore what your risk of developing heart disease might be.
Now, are there ways we can lower our blood pressure? Are there regimens that we can follow in terms of diet, exercise, et cetera?
Certainly, lifestyle change is one of the most important aspects of controlling high blood pressure. Things that we can do include things that we know about. Two things that are important: moving more, eating better, simple concepts. Exercising 30 minutes a day, 4 to 5 times a week, eating foods, including mainly fruits and vegetables, avoiding sugar, in particular as it relates to hypertension, limiting our sodium intake to something less than 1,500 milligrams a day. And this is particularly important during times of stress. We have to recognize that when we treat the common cold using decongestants, these decongestants can actually increase our blood pressure. Things called non-steroidals or aspirin, not aspirin so much as ibuprofen and naproxen, they can raise your blood pressure. And we tend to take these medications during the time that we have a common cold. So it's important that we modify our lifestyle. It's important that when we have hypertension, it's important that we read the label, not only on our blood pressure medicine, but also on our cans of soup and other prepared foods to better know whether or not through our diet we're increasing the chance that our blood pressure will increase and become out of control.
Now, are there alternatives to these decongestants and antihistamines and cough medicines that may raise our blood pressure?
There are, but again, the important thing to note is that for the most part, people will tolerate these medications. And it's hard sometimes to separate blood pressure elevations during the time of illness from the medication versus elevations that are related to just our being ill. So it's important that no matter which is the case, that you check your blood pressure during these times of illness.
Dr. Lawrence, the AHA Scientific Conference recently concluded. Were there anything new out there, any new information that we can pass on to our audience?
No. There's a lot that's new. As it relates to high blood pressure, what caught my eye were some of the studies that looked at the role of community programs in the management of hypertension. It's this concept we have of it takes a village to really get things under control, to really move the needle as it relates to large populations getting their blood pressure under control. There was a study in particular out of UCLA that was funded by the American Heart Association that looked at the role of the church, of a church-based community hypertension program. And what they found is that through this church-run program, in affiliation with the American Heart Association, we were able to lower blood pressure in African-American women significantly. We were able to decrease waist circumference in African-American women. We were able to make their triglycerides look better. All these things that are risk factors for developing hypertension, risk factors for developing diabetes. It's not just what happens in the physician's office that makes a difference as it relates to managing blood pressure, managing risk factors, but it's things that happen in our daily lives, things that happen out there in the real world that make a difference.
Dr. Lawrence, where can our listeners get additional information and maybe codify some of the things that you've told us today?
I think the American Heart Association site, heart.org/HBP, that's heart.org/HBP, is an excellent place to start.
Dr. Willie Lawrence, in conversation with Richard Neer. If you'd like more information, go to the website heart.org/HBP. That's heart.org/HBP. I'm Michael Harrison. Richard Neer returns for some final words. We'll have a bit of chit and chat as we come to the final segment of this, our second hour of our big two-hour get-together here on A Touch of Gray in just a moment.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Whoa, a new digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, I'm glad you like it, because I can't wait to toss the big stereo. And now that we got your dad that big HD TV he wanted, we can throw out our old TV, too.
Hold up. You can't just throw out electronics.
Really?
They need to be recycled or donated.
And how would we do that?
It's so easy, Mom. Today, recycling electronics is just as easy as buying them. GreenerGadgets.org has all the info. We just enter our zip code to find a certified recycling center nearby. There are thousands of them, and new ones are being added all the time. Some of our local stores are even certified recycling locations.
I like that.
Did you know that some of the stuff in our old electronics could be used to make new products and conserve natural resources?
Well, okay then. Let's gather them up. What was that website again?
GreenerGadgets.org. We just enter our zip code and go.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
For almost every American worker, Social Security is part of the plan for a secure retirement. It's important to know how the program works. If you have questions, the answers are easy to find when you visit www.socialsecurity.gov. Use the retirement estimator to get a benefit estimate. Browse our frequently asked questions. You can even apply for benefits online. Visit www.socialsecurity.gov to figure out your retirement plan. That's www.socialsecurity.gov.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison, and we continue our conversation with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. Richard, we were talking about hot and cold, and you just had a very interesting conversation about colds and flu. And one of the things I was thinking about listening is how the word cold, catch a cold, really has nothing to do with the temperature. And one of the inconsistencies of logic that I've always wrestled with my entire life is the relationship between cold temperatures and catching a cold. Doctors will always tell you, the cold has nothing to do with catching a cold. It's bacterial, it's germs, blah, blah, blah. You can get one in the summer as well as the winter. And yet there does seem to be, just from experience, a correlation between being cold and getting sniffles and getting a cold.
And why is the flu always in the winter? You know, if it's an influenza, if it's some kind of virus,
mm-hmm.
shouldn't it be just as prevalent in the summer as the winter?
I have never gotten a straight answer from a scientist. I have never gotten a straight answer from a doctor about these kinds of questions.
Well, you know what? We're going to be interviewing some in the future, and I'm going to ask them that very question. Because you're right. I've never gotten a straight answer either.
Yeah. You know, it's like, why? Well, you know, I remember, you know, button up your shirt. You don't want to catch a cold. Close your collar. Wear a scarf. You know, put a hat on. Now, I can understand to protect yourself from frostbite. I can see you protect yourself just from discomfort. But there is clearly, from my experience, a connection between temperature and winter diseases. And you get all kinds of things. Well, it runs your immune system down. And that's crap. There's stuff that can run your immune system down in the heat. You know, I sometimes think there's a very, very, there's a huge limit, well, this we know, to what science knows. And a lot of these people are so egotistical, they just don't admit, we don't know. They come up with, you know, like, ask a physicist, what's the universe expanding into? And watch them break down. Their logic just totally breaks. The universe is expanding. Well, what's it expanding into? Nothing, because it's everything. Well, then how is it expanding relative to what? Well, the space between the galaxies is getting larger. Maybe the galaxies are getting smaller. Have you ever thought about that?
Hmm.
Go away. I don't want to be on your show.
No. Well, that's the thing. I mean, we feel compelled. Experts have all the answers, and they really don't. You know, doctors, you know, brilliant physicists and everything. I mean, they have theories. And they have a lot of logic to back up their theories, but a lot of times you find that these theories are incorrect. Like, we're going to get a good view of Pluto now. Pluto, is Pluto a planet now, or is it not a planet?
Well, that's an interesting discussion that I can go into for hours with you, because it's one of my pet topics. I guess Pluto is no longer a planet, but then you know what? Nothing is a planet. It's all categories. What does Mercury and Jupiter have in common? What do they have in common if you look at them materially? They
orbit the sun. That's about it, right?
Yeah, well, so does Pluto orbit the sun, and so do the asteroids orbit the sun, and so does everything orbit the sun. I orbit the sun. Am I a planet? Technically, maybe. I have people living on me. They're called little bugs. Hopefully, they're very little. I don't mean to give the wrong impression, but what I'm trying to say is you can do anything you want with words.
And since we're rambling here, whatever happened to Janet Planet? Remember Van Morrison's wife,
Janet Planet. What a great time for names that was. We should do a whole show on the names of celebrities from the rock era.
There you go.
And the children that they named, and their wives, girlfriends, and pseudonyms. Richard, always a pleasure to talk to a man of your intellectual flexibility, and we shall continue this into the future. Happy New Year to you as we roll into 2015. Thank you, Beverly Santinella, for your contributions as producer to this fine program, and, of course, to Stephen Wiseman and to Kevin Casey, and the great Carol Marks, the host and founder of this program, without whom it would not be possible. I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another two-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.